Well, this is Arthur Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and tonight the views of our guests, and we're going to ask you to hold your calls unless we ask for them. We're going to be talking to a young man named Pat Briley, who's been investigating for a good period of time the Oklahoma City bombing, and of course, as it became obvious that there were people from the Middle East who were involved in the bombing, and the government covered that up. This has led him to investigate the presence of Hezbollah and Hamas and other terrorist cells here in the United States that were operating back in 1995 and are still operating in the United States today. We know, if you haven't yet seen the video, Jihad in America by Stephen Emerson, that the FBI was tracking terrorist cells, one specifically in Oklahoma City, back in 1988 when Abdullah Azzam, the man who founded Al-Qaeda, came to the United States and was allowed to recruit people here and raise money. And he talked about how blood would be flowing in the streets in America. And in 1989 and in 1990, they were monitoring the terrorist training camps in upstate New York. And they knew what was going to happen in 1993 because they had infiltrated the terrorist cell in New York City, responsible for the World Trade Center bombing in 1993. And they did nothing to stop it. In fact, they fired the man who was at the very pinnacle of this whole conspiracy, a man named Mr. Salem, and then later on they rehired him for $3 million. But, you know, the incredible story, 1994, Stephen Emerson's video, Jihad in America, came out, and it was actively suppressed by our intelligence agencies. They did not want the American people to know about the Islamic terror cells operating in the United States, and that video was not available until after 9/11. And then, of course, in 1995, when we had the bombing of the Murrah building in Oklahoma City, and there was obvious Islamic terrorist involvement in that, and everything was done to cover it up and to cover up the people who were working with Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols to bomb that Murrah building. And it was obviously there were explosives inside the building. And in 1996, when TWA flight 800 was shot down, there was no question that there were missiles that were up there and brought that plane down, and the government lied and suppressed that information. And had the information come out, I'm sure we would have never had what happened on 9/11 on September 11th, 2001. But still the cover-up continues. I mean, the government insists we're involved in a war on terrorism. The terrorists want to hurt us, but they've not closed our borders. Everything has been done to keep the borders open so that the terrorists can continue to come into our nation. And none of this makes sense unless there is another agenda behind it. Well, you have one young man who's done a lot of research and worked his heart out trying to warn the American people what's going on, as our guest this evening, Pat Briley. Pat, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Monteith. Thank you for having me.
Well, why don't you go ahead and you tell the people your story. You got involved, I assume, after the bombing of the Murrah building, and what did you find out?
Well, I started working on the Oklahoma City bombing the morning it happened, and I'll tell you a quick story as to why I did. I was in bed when the bomb went off with the flu, and I was literally shaken out of my bed. There were two blasts, and my wife came home from work. She works with two prominent FBI agents' wives in the case, and they had taken her aside a few minutes after the bombing, after they had talked to their husbands, and told my wife that the FBI husbands had been forewarned of the Oklahoma City bombing, and they were so glad their husbands had not gone to the Murrah building, even though FBI agents went to the Murrah building every day, three to four of them, but they did not go. And then later on, they took my wife aside and told her never to talk about it. And then we had an FBI agent come to our house and, in my opinion, try to intimidate us not to talk. So because of that, and because some of my friends were killed, I got involved in trying to find out what happened. And in the process of doing this, I worked with just about every major journalist that looked into this that came to town, like Ambrose Abraham Pritchard. I actually called him up and asked him to come. I knew Charles Key, the Oklahoma representative, who worked very hard for years, helped him have a county grand jury investigation. He wrote a bombing report. I worked closely with KFOR-TV, the reporter there, Brad Edwards, and also Jana Davis for many years. I worked with William Jasper, the New American, for many years, actually 11 and a half years almost now. And I also made contact with an interesting gentleman named Jesse Clear, who was the Pentagon terrorism advisor in the Pentagon at the time of the Oklahoma City bombing, and wrote the classified and public report for global terrorism up until 1995. And I went to the various congressional committees, Senate Intelligence Committee, Senate Judiciary Committee, House Intelligence, House Judiciary Committee. I even went to Speaker Hastert, talked to his chief of staff, and wrote a report for the 9/11 Commission about the connection between the 93 World Trade Center bombing, the Oklahoma City bombing, and 9/11, some of the same people involved in all three, and some of the same, not only terrorists, but some of the same government officials that failed us in all three, and some of them are still in power, including Mr. Chertoff and Mr. Negroponte, the DNI. I'm giving you a quick panoramic view here of what my efforts have been, and we're still working here. Mr. Rohrbacher, Dana Rohrbacher, the congressman from California, is the chairman of the subcommittee on the House International Relations Committee investigations, and he's going to hold a one-day hearing, not long enough, on the Oklahoma City bombing in September. I've been trying to get in touch with him and provide evidence to him as well. But the reason why I'm interested in the Oklahoma City bombing is not just justice for the 168 victims, because the statute of limitation on murder has not run out, and the other people involved that we now know who they are. But also,
hold that thought there just a moment, Pat. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Pat Briley. And Pat has been at this ever since the very morning when the Oklahoma City explosion, the attack on the Murrah Building, took place. And he's had an opportunity to talk to many, many people about it. The significant thing is that had the truth come out about the Oklahoma City bombing, we never would have had 9-1-1. And what Pat points out is that many of the same people were involved in the Oklahoma City bombing that were involved with 9-1-1, and many of the same FBI officers and many of the same government officials who covered up what happened to the Oklahoma City bombing also covered up what happened on 9-1-1, and they are in key positions in government today. And why would anybody want to conceal the truth from the American people about the involvement of these various Islamic terrorist movements which are operating in America today? So, Pat, go ahead, pick up the story.
Well, I was explaining why I was working on this and still work on this so hard, not only for justice for the Oklahoma City bombing case, but because in our investigation we have learned not only who the terrorists were involved in all three of these attacks, Oklahoma City 9/11, 93 World Trade Center bombing, but also their connections to active terrorist cells and terrorist organizations sponsored by foreign terrorist nations, obviously Syria and Iran, but also Communist China, who is a leading terrorist backer of terrorism in the world today. But also Hezbollah, Hamas, Al-Fukra, Islamic Jihad, and Al-Qaeda. They're involved in all these attacks and in these cells around the country that the FBI and the DNI, Director of National Intelligence, are, as a matter of policy, are continuing to allow to operate.
Now, of course, most people know about Hamas, Hezbollah, and Al-Qaeda, but what about this Al-Fukra, what you talk about?
Well, Al-Fukra is actually headquartered in Pakistan, and its leader, Sheikh Jalani, is closely aligned with bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, and it's been in existence for over 20 years. It's been in the United States for over 20 years. It runs 20 training camps. It's in major U.S. cities. They primarily recruit black men who are Muslims. And they train them, and they send them to Pakistan and Afghanistan. They have a very large presence in the United States. And I wrote an article and published this. In the last 20 years, Al-Fukra has been involved in over 30 major attacks of terror in the United States against U.S. citizens, and they're not on the State Department terror list.
And I think that was what was significant. They're not on the State Department terror list, even though that our government knows they're a terrorist organization tied to international terrorism, but working here in America, recruiting people and raising funds. Why do they refuse to put them on the terrorist list? That would be the question.
Well, you know, I don't know all the reasons why, Stan, and I can offer a few. I just know the facts of the what. But I will say this. A number of black Muslims that we believe were tied to Al-Fukra and are continuing to allow to operate in all these training camps and cells around the United States and had a connection to Oklahoma City bombing, a number of them were trained by the CIA at Camp Peary in the 1980s, late 80s, early 90s, to fight the Soviet Union. You know, that was our effort to train people to fight with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan against the Soviet. The problem is a number of these Al-Fukra members, as well as some other Islamic terrorist members, like Ali Muhammad, have become blowback terrorists, meaning that they have come back to the United States and now attack the United States.
Now, for our listeners who do not know who Ali Muhammad is, I think that you should tell them, because he's a key player in everything going on today.
Yes, sir, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'm going to include him. I have a list of 13 Middle Eastern people involved in Oklahoma City bombing, and I'm going to include him. And this gets into the connection of the 93 World Trade Center bombing to the Oklahoma City bombing. Ali Muhammad was a Green Beret. He's an Egyptian. He worked for the CIA. He worked for the FBI out of Sacramento, and he was working for the FBI when he moved bin Laden from Sudan to Afghanistan. But Ali Muhammad was used by the FBI and U.S. attorneys, Michael Chertoff and Patrick Fitzgerald, to train the seven bomb makers involved in the 93 World Trade Center. Ali Muhammad was used to train them. When he was finally arrested, I believe it was in 98, and tried for the Tanzanian-Kenyan bombings, he was found to have a manual that he wrote on how to hide explosives in public buildings, like the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City. He was the expert in training people how to do that, not only at World Trade Center, but we live in Oklahoma City.
And, of course, he was then arrested because he was instrumental in the bombing of the American embassies in both Tanzania and Kenya in 1998. And so here's a man who has been funded by the CIA, trained by the CIA and the Green Berets, and worked for the FBI and high government officials, who's actually working for Al-Qaeda.
That's correct.
And he was actually then sent to prison, wasn't he?
Well, no, you know, that's a very good point. The National Geographic channel did a 2-hour documentary on Ali Muhammad. I recommend your viewers watch that. I think it's re-shown on September 5th. It represents my and a lot of other people work, including Peter Lance, and including the gentleman at the State Department counterterrorism official. Actually, it was the deputy director, deputy secretary. That's L.T. Johnson, who told me all about Ali Muhammad as well. I talked to him. Ali Muhammad is someone who, according to the National Geographic, never was actually sentenced. And he's under protective custody.
He's under protective custody. And this is the man who blew up our buildings in Tanzania and Kenya, and he's being protected by our government?
That's right. And, well, you know, they say that he was a double agent, and he's such a valuable resource. For example, Jack Quinn, an FBI counterterrorism official, goes and visits him regularly, and they move him around in and out. You know, he's sort of like under house arrest.
Well, we can't wonder how many of the people that supposedly are involved in these bombings are really agent provocateurs, like the number two man in the Irish Republican Army. You know, this terrible danger to the British government, and yet he was actually a secret undercover MI6 agent, the chief torturer for the Irish Republican Army, who was killing people and torturing them to death, accusing them of being British agents, was himself a British agent.
Yes.
This is standard technique. The number two man
Glad
in
Abu
Sayyaf organization in the Philippines, the Islamic terrorist organization in the Philippines, was actually an agent of the Philippine government. So,
and also the CIA, and I want to get into that tonight.
All right, fine.
One other thing on Ali Muhammad, though, very, very critical to understand this. While he was working for the FBI out of Sacramento in 1995, and they knew he was working and talking to bin Laden, he traveled, and the FBI knew this, he traveled through the United States. And who traveled with him? We know for certain Dr. Zawahiri, head of Islamic Jihad, the number two in Al-Qaeda, and we're pretty sure Khalid Sheikh Mohammed traveled. And where did they go? Oklahoma City in April 1995. We have a number of witnesses, number of affidavits. The FBI knows about this. The various intelligence committees of Congress know about this. They've done nothing, but that's Ali Muhammad.
All right, fine. For our listeners, then, Al-Zawahiri, who was traveling with Ali Muhammad, you've probably seen the pictures of him. He's this number two man in Al-Qaeda. He wears the turban. He has a little dot in the middle of his forehead, short a beard. And he was allowed to come to the United States. He was wanted for terror for murder in Egypt, but he was allowed to come to the United States in 1995 and travel all over our country raising funds for Islamic terrorism with the full knowledge and support of our government. Why would you do something like that? Was it 1995 when he was traveling with Ali Muhammad?
Yes, that was April 1995.
The clippings out of the New York Times talking about how Al-Zawahiri was traveling throughout the United States. I didn't know he was tied up with Ali Muhammad. But
absolutely.
How
they
many of these people
him,
are actually government, U.S. government agents? Go ahead.
Well, the other thing that's also so damning about this situation is that while he traveled, and we believe he also traveled with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in the United States. He's the mastermind of 9/11 and the 93 World Trade Center, too.
Now, for those people who don't know, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was supposedly the mastermind of the first World Trade Center bombing. The second World Trade Center bombing was arrested in 2003, 3 years ago. He was, of course, a longtime employee of the ISI, which is Pakistani intelligence,
right,
which is an appendage and closely tied to the American CIA.
Absolutely.
Nobody
right.
has seen Khalid Sheikh Mohammed since he was arrested. They're telling us, oh, well, we can't let anybody talk to him. We've got to keep interrogating him every day. Some people think he's probably put up in a villa someplace drinking martinis and that he was a double agent. Why won't they bring this man to trial? Why would they not allow him to testify in the Zacharias Moussaoui hearings? Or Moussaoui asked to have him testify, and our government will not anybody see him, will not tell anybody where he is, and you wonder if he is too being protected like Ali Muhammad.
I'm glad you mentioned the Moussaoui trial and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in that context, because there's several reasons why they would not want Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to actually appear to testify. By the way, they were trying to get written interrogatories from him, and they would not allow that. But there's two reasons that I can think of, and there's probably more. When he was traveling in the United States with Zawahiri and Ali Muhammad, he was setting up what I call an underground terrorist railroad network where Hezbollah, Hamas, Al-Qaeda and Al-Fukra, and actually Islamic Jihad, are forming super cells in the United States. He helped set up that network while he was traveling. The other reason they didn't want him to be the Moussaoui trial, because a number of the other people involved in the Oklahoma City bombing, which we're going to get to, they didn't want to have to testify, and that's a guy named Mujahid Manepta, or Melvin Lattimore. He was involved in all three, the Oklahoma City bombing, 9/11, and the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, all three. We'll get back to that in a minute here.
Well, I think it's so vitally important that people understand that many of these people who are supposedly our enemies are actually agent provocateurs. The first World Trade Center bombing, Kayla Sheikh Mohammed, the mastermind. The Second World Trade Center bombing, Kayla Sheikh Mohammed, the mastermind, and yet the government won't let anybody see him. Well, go right ahead there with your story, Pat.
Well, we were talking about Quaid Mohammed being in the mastermind as the 93 World Trade Center, and again in 2001, the 9/11 attacks. His nephew is Ronza Youssef, who was also convicted, caught, and imprisoned for the 93 World Trade Center bombing, and was the mastermind of Project Bojinka, but traveled through the United States to acquire weapons of mass destruction for Ihsan Barghouti and the CIA and George Bush to give to Iraq and Iran. That's a fact. But Khalid Mohammed was working with Ramzi Youssef in the Abu Sayyaf cell in the Philippines in late 94 and 95 that was being tracked and closely monitored by the U.S. ambassador in a working group there in the Philippines and the CIA. And the U.S. ambassador, who knew about all this and their plans for 9/11 and the Oklahoma City bombing, was John Negroponte. And the testimony about this came out counterpunched March this year by a guy named Sam Carmelowitz, who is the senior State Department security officer in the Philippines that worked with Mr. Negroponte's working group. And he is offered to testify at a federal lawsuit that we've got going against Iraq, because Iraq and al-Qaeda were working in the cell that Negroponte was monitoring to set up not just Project Bojinka, but attacks on Oklahoma City and really the 9/11 attacks, where they were going to train pilots in the United States to fly them into a number of skyscrapers, including and also the Pentagon. And the FBI knew this in 1995.
All right, now that is Operation Bojinka. And that was discovered on the laptop computer of a man named Ramzi Youssef, who is today in federal prison. He is the nephew of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. So, you know, here the government knew all about the plan, which was called Operation Bojinka in 1995. The plan was to hijack American planes and fly them into the World Trade Center.
Dr. Monteith, I need to correct you on this point, and it's a really important point.
All right.
I'm being precise here for a lot of reasons. You know, the most recent situation where there was a threat of planes being flown from England into the United States, and people said that really was an offshoot of Project Bojinka. The original Project Bojinka that was hatched in the Philippines by Ramzi Youssef and Khalid Mohammed was to actually blow up airliners over the Pacific.
Right, but didn't it also include at least an adjacent part of that was to hijack planes and crash them into buildings?
Well, yes. Now, my understanding of this, that they did find on Khalid, well, Ramzi Youssef's computer that had a lot of notes from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, an alternate plan. I call it the 9/11 attack plan.
All right, fine.
Because some people say it was only Project Bojinka and it didn't include 9/11. Oh, yes, it did. It did include training pilots in Oklahoma and flight schools in Tulsa and Norman and out in San Diego and Florida. And the FBI started tracking these pilots in 96 and came to these flight schools and told the owners that they were tracking these people because they were suspected they were going to be flying them into buildings. And this was 1996. And they said they didn't know. They knew. And so did Mr. Negroponte. They knew. And so that's another matter, but I just want to highlight that.
Is that covered in this Counterpunch article you were speaking of?
Yes.
And what date is that?
What date? I believe it's a March 3rd, March 5th this year.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
And, yeah, I highly recommend it. You can Google it and find it easily.
All right, fine. So basically you're talking about this cell that is working over there, this small group of terrorists and working over in the Philippines in 1995, and of course, but what about Terry Nichols? And then we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, we know that the government was monitoring these people in the Philippines in 1995, and that's, of course, when plans were made in 1995 by Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who probably was a double agent working for our own government, but the plan was laid out for hijacking American airplanes and in the United States and flying them at the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, the White House, the Sears Tower, and the Transamerica building in San Francisco. And this was known in 1995 by our government, and nothing was done about it. Now, what about the tie-in to Terry Nichols at that time. We're told that Terry Nichols was making trips to the Philippines. Was he any way related to this group, this Islamic cell over there?
Well, according to a member of the Abu Sayyaf cell, Edwin Angeles, who was also undercover for the Philippine government and also met and knew the CIA and the working group that Negroponte was running, Mr. Angeles says that he met with Terry Nichols, an American farmer, in 94, and talked, and obviously to make plans for the Oklahoma City bombing. I might mention that in that cell in the Philippines were five Iraqis, and one of them was an Iraqi explosive expert. One of the attorneys I worked with over the years, who was involved in lawsuits with Iraq and also H.W. Bush over transfers of legal WMDs to Iraq, is Michael Johnston of Oklahoma City, and he's got the evidence that I've just described about the Iraqis working in the cells with the Al-Qaeda people and, of course, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Mr. Johnston has filed a federal lawsuit against Iraq that Bush has been trying to constantly block, but it's still moving forward. The same judge, I've forgotten his name now, that blocked Seibel Edmonds is the same judge that's tried to, he's a Bush appointee, has tried to block Johnston's lawsuit, but it's now proceeding.
Okay, go ahead.
So Terry Nichols was in the Philippines, and he had Philippine bride, and all the evidence we have is that he did work with a terrorist associated with the Philippine effort. And Mr. McVeigh, when he was pulled over by Mr. Hanger, according to...
Mr. Hanger, was, I saw, was the police officer who
right.
arrested him. Go ahead.
Highway patrolman pulled him over. Paul Wolfowitz, the Assistant Secretary of State, is quoted by Paul Bedard of U.S. News and World Report, and also told David Shippers, who's the attorney for the impeachment trial of President Clinton, McVeigh had Iraqi agent phone numbers in his possession. And there is a well-known fax that was put out the day of the bombing by a close associate of McVeigh saying that McVeigh, this is someone that met with McVeigh even after the bombing, McVeigh did it to avenge the death of children killed not only at Waco, but in the first Gulf War. So there's another link to Iraq. But I think the Iranians could very well have been involved, and, of course, Al-Qaeda. The Muslim Brotherhood is what's really driving this. But, you know, eventually I want to get to the discovery we've made now. We've pretty well identified nine people in Oklahoma City that were directly involved in Oklahoma City bombing. A lot of them are still at large. We know who they are. They're still being protected by the FBI. There are four others that I include in this list, like Khalid Mohammed, Zawahiri, Ramzi Youssef, and Ali Mohammed, who I believe were instrumental in the Oklahoma City bombing. But there are nine others, and a lot of them were involved in 9/3 World Trade Center bombing, and some of them were also involved in 9/11. I would like tonight to describe those people to you.
Why would the government be protecting these people? Why wouldn't they let the American people know about the radical Islamic movement, and I'm talking about both, you know, Iraqi and Al-Qaeda, certainly, and probably Hezbollah and Hamas. Why wouldn't they let the American people know the truth about them?
That's a good question, Stan. And I, you know, I sat down the other day and wrote down about 15 different reasons why that are all credible and I think are all true at the same time. The problem we have is trying to convince enough people of what is wrong here, what happened, and I do want to discuss why. But if I guess wrong on any one of the whys, on some of these people who are trying to avoid accountability for either not doing a good job or having a failed policy, will say, we don't want to listen to the facts in this case because the person presenting the facts guessed wrong on the why. So I want to focus first on the what.
And go ahead.
I wanted to describe the nine people that we have identified involved in Oklahoma City bombing, 9/3 World Trade Center bombing 9/11. By name.
All right, fine. I want to hold that thought. We'll just get back to that in just a moment or two. Here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, I want to be sure you've got adequate proof. We certainly don't want to take a chance on libeling anybody who can come back and say, well, I was named on this program. So we will be back in just a moment here with Pat Riley, who's been working his heart out for a long time to try to understand what really happened. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Pat Riley, who's been investigating what happened on the morning of the when the Murrah Building was bombed back in 1995. That was April of 1995, and so it's been well over 10 years, going well over 11 years now. He's been involved, and he's been able to identify some of the people. Now, there was one man who was identified by Jana Davis, and she was actually sued for mentioning his name publicly, and the case went to court, and the judge said she had perfect right to identify him. This is a man who was identified as having been with Timothy McVeigh on the morning of the attack on the World Trade Center, and the government is protecting this man who is involved with a bombing in Oklahoma City that killed 168 people. So pick up the story there.
Well, on the person you mentioned is an Iraqi who served in the Republican Guard. He was brought back to the United States by a decision first by President H.W. Bush, and then it was finally carried out under President Clinton. He brought back with 4,000 Iraqis, and they were settled in Oklahoma City, Nebraska, a number of states, and they also have committed crimes, murders, and robberies that Michael Reagan on his radio program has been talking about for years. But Mr. Husseini actually wasn't outed by Jana Davis on Channel 4, and they were able to prevail because they showed that they didn't. It was brought out by a different circuitous route. It was not their fault. But Mr. Husseini was a baggage handler at Boston Logan Airport at 9/11, and yet they lost track of him. The FBI has never interviewed him, even though he came to town for a deposition with Jana Davis in a lawsuit. And they had plenty of opportunity to interview him, and I've interviewed many of the witnesses that saw Al Husseini in the late model brown Chevrolet truck that was the subject of the FBI's APB in Oklahoma City for 2 weeks to be on the lookout for two Middle Eastern males that were at the scene fleeing, and I've interviewed the witnesses. I went to Channel 4 early and told them about Al Husseini's involvement and talked to Brad Edwards to provide them information about this. Then Mrs. Davis picked up on it. And so I know a lot more about this, and I'm glad Mrs. Davis did do more, and I encouraged her to write her book, and I gave her a lot of information about this. And there was Hamas cell involved in this, which I'll get to in a minute, that was associated with this effort to help Husseini. But Husseini was seen with McVeigh in a number of locations in Oklahoma City before the bombing. There are many witnesses on that, and, of course, in the morning of the bombing, in front of the Murrah Building, fleeing. But he's someone we can talk about. You know, I mentioned I was going to name nine people. Well, and I understand your concern about lawsuits, and you can be sued by CARE, which is the Council on American Islamic Relations, to sue everybody.
Hold that thought right there, please.
Yes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Patrick Riley, and we're talking about people who were involved with the attack on the Oklahoma City building, on the Murrah Building, that the government knew about and protected. And one of them was a man named Al Husseini. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Husseini was in this brown Chevrolet truck that was the subject of the FBI's APB. But he was also in the truck with another man named Abraham Ahmad. Abraham Ahmad was picked up in London and brought back to the United States, and they did find bomb-making tools and magazines in his luggage.
He had fled right after the
Murrah Building. That's correct, he fled.
And he was actually, he was picked up in London, brought back to the United States, and that was, even though he had bomb-making material in his truck, they let him go.
That's correct. And what's important, he wasn't just an innocent rider in the truck with Mr. Husseini. Mr. Husseini and Mr. Ahmad both worked for the same employer, a Dr. Samir Khalil, who still lives in Oklahoma City and has been identified as a PLO and Hamas activist. And Mr. Khalil, and he's one of the people that I will mention because it's been written about, talked about for the last 11 years. Mr. Khalil not only worked for Hamas, but he's involved with Iraqis. Mr. Khalil was being investigated for criminal enterprises, property scams, auto scams by a federal grand jury in Oklahoma. by Assistant U.S. Prosecutor Ted Richardson in April 1995. Right after the Oklahoma City bombing, the Clinton Justice Department Reno shut down that that grand jury. And a year later, year and a half later approximately, Mr. Richardson was found dead not too far from Khalil's home with a gunshot wound to his chest. In fact, they delayed later on the McVeigh federal trial because of Mr. Richardson's death. But
I'm sorry, who is Mr. Richardson?
Ted Richardson was the assistant U.S. attorney in Oklahoma City that was investigating Samir Khalil before the Oklahoma City bombing for his criminal enterprises.
He was ended up being assassinated.
Some people try to say he was suicided. Other people say he was murdered. All I can tell you is they shut down his grand jury and they delayed the McVeigh trial for his funeral.
Basically, of course, this whole thing smacks of cover-up.
Yes, and let me explain again. Dr. Khalil was the employer of Al Hussein Husseini and Abraham Ahmad and a number of other Iraqis that we believe are involved in Oklahoma City. He's the third guy. Remember I said I was going to name nine.
All right, fine. Well, I'll make sure that you have we could just refer to them by one name rather than a dual name unless there's, adequate.
Dr. Khalil.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So we got Husseini, Ahmad, and Khalil.
Okay.
Okay. Now, another thing. I was involved with all these investigators at Channel 4 and attorneys and some people in law enforcement back in 95. We obtained surveillance photographs at Dr. Khalil's shop, the body shop, in early May 1995, less than a month of Oklahoma City bombing. And in these photographs, you have Dr. Khalil, Al Hussein Husseini, and you have a number of Iraqis, and you have two other people. You have a man and a woman. Now, I will not mention their names on this broadcast for two reasons. Yes, be careful about lawsuits. Also, they're at large, and they are criminals involved in murderous crimes. And they're also in Oklahoma City. We know where they are. But the break we've had in this case is we were investigating a criminal enterprise, which I can't name, and we identified the people that this criminal enterprise that works with Hamas, Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, and Al-Fuqa, all four. And we staked it out, and we saw people associated with their offices and their headquarters, and the people we saw looked like the people that we had photographed in 1995. So we got some very good private investigators and some very good photographs made of these people at close range at their address. And the private investigators agree. The photographs show that the people that running this criminal enterprise in Oklahoma City that tied to all these terrorist groups are these two people, man and woman, that were with Khalil and Husseini, are the same people in the pictures that we took in 1995. And that's a major break in this case. And then we've investigated this. So that's five. Khalil, Ahmad, Husseini, a man and a woman. And, we're trying to get law enforcement to interrogate them because they know a lot about terrorist activities. We're trying to get law enforcement to charge them with crimes and certainly criminal activities as well as conspiring with terrorist organizations.
But, of course, you realize that the government knows who these people are.
We believe they do now, but we have worked with...
They're being actively protected.
Well, I've written articles asserting that they're being protected. Now, I'm not going to say all FBI agents actively do this. In the 9/11 situation, you had Robert Wright fired by Robert Mueller for his accusations that he was blocked by the FBI in Washington from opening criminal investigations against people who were involved in terrorism. Also, he was blocked by Mr. Chertoff, I might add, that were involved in 9/11. That's still going on to this day. But there were individual FBI agents, like Harry Sumit in the Massali case, who tried to get something done, out of the Minnesota office. But you have FBI leadership that are failing the country and ordering FBI agents who want to do something not to do the thing that they're supposed to do. This happened in Oklahoma City. The agent we were working with wanted to do something with this. This agent was reassigned, taken off of counterterrorism. She got all the evidence, put it in the right place, And then they don't want to do it. It's a cover-up. That's why they're protecting these people. Whether they intend to or not, the end result is they're protecting them. But I want to keep the continuity flowing here with these people, how they're all interconnected. We're at five. Now I want to get to number six. Number six is the jewel of all this. His name is Muslim. He's a black Muslim. He's a member of Al-Fuqra. He's a member of Al-Qaeda and connected to Hamas, as well as this terror enterprise I've just described run by this man and this woman in these pictures. This man is Mujeb Abukader Manepta. He's a U.S. citizen. He's from St. Louis, but he also goes by his U.S. name, Melvin Lattimore.
All right, fine. Well, now, is there any proof of this?
Absolutely, and I will get to that immediately. Mr. Lattimore was taken to federal trial in November of 2001 in Oklahoma City.
And what was he charged with?
He was charged with carrying a firearm, which is a violation of his parole. He's a convicted felon for stockpiling weapons and explosives in an apartment back in St. Louis back 20 years ago. And so, from our knowledge, they got him off the street to put him on ice. But at his trial, and by the way, I know the reporter that covered that personally. Her name is Joe Thomas of the New York Times. She no longer works for the Times, so I know her pretty well. And we have the court transcripts, and we got the testimony. During that trial, the BATF agent, Jerry Whitney, testified that Mr. Lattimore ought to be convicted of a lot more because he said the following. Mr. Lattimore was described to the FBI by a high-level, highly placed FBI informant one day after the Oklahoma City bombing of being involved in the Oklahoma City bombing.
That was brought out then at the trial. And I bet did that get into the newspapers?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
But you had to know where to look. It wasn't carried on national TV or the mainstream press, but it was in the Daily Oklahoma, it was in the New York Times. Next point. It also said, and in his trial, Mr. Whitney testified, that Mr. Lattimore's credit card was used to purchase the bomb-making materials for the 1993 World Trade Center bombers. Court document. And it turns out that's fact. This is Salim. This is the operation run by Khalid Muhammad and Ramzi Youssef and Mr. Chertoff, and covered up by Mr. Chertoff and Mr. Patrick Fitzgerald. And there's new evidence that just came out on that, by the way. And Ali Muhammad, he trained them all. And we're pretty sure that Mr. Lattimore attended the 1988 conference with Azam, who is the mentor of bin Laden and also co-founder of Al-Qaeda and really a co-founder of Hamas. Hamas, Al-Qaeda, and Hezbollah have working agreements that have been well documented, if you know where to look, to cooperate now. And it started with Lattimore meeting with Azam in Oklahoma City and also with bin Laden's Secretary El-Haj, who was also convicted for the 93 World Trade Center bombing, Tanzania and Kenya bombing as well. This has all started in Oklahoma City. But Lattimore also, here's the other part. Lattimore, I'm going to give you some other proofs about Lattimore now, ties to Oklahoma City bombing and ties to 9/11. Lattimore, I've had reporters read me FBI files about this. Lattimore was Zacharias Massawi's roommate in Norman, Oklahoma, when Massawi went to the Norman Flight School.
All right, for our listeners out there, Zacharias Massawi was the gentleman who was arrested in Minneapolis,
yeah.
Shortly before the 9/11 attack. And they always say, "Oh, if they just in Washington D.C., if they'd just been able to connect the dots between the Phoenix Memorandum, which was concerned about, people, the Islamic people learning to fly, and Zacharias Massawi, who was thought by the FBI agents up there to be learning to fly a 747 so that he could crash it into buildings . But the thing is, they did actually connect the dots because I talked to the director of the woman who owns the Norman Flight School, the Airman's Flight School in Norman, Oklahoma, and she personally told me that 11 days before 9/11, the FBI was there talking to her about Zacharias Massawi, so they knew everything that was going on, but they can't tell the American people because think of the implications if they knew the attack was coming and didn't try to stop it.
I'd like to give you some more proof, and you're absolutely correct, Stan.
Go ahead.
On Lattimore and Massawi, Lattimore was also briefly This is also an FBI file that I've had read to me and know about, was the roommate of Al-Shii and Al-Hazmi, two other hijackers that came through, and also Muhammad Atta came through and visited with him as they were coming through going out to San Diego.
Now,
and that
now,
was being monitored
was
by the FBI.
In Norman, Oklahoma, right.
Yes. And also, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed personally sent Massali via Paris and the Hamburg cell to live with Melvin Lattimore in Norman, Oklahoma. That's fact. And there's a CIA agent who was monitoring all this at the time who suddenly appeared in Norman, Oklahoma as a visiting professor, but he was the agent. His name is David Edger. He's a close personal a friend and associate of the Chancellor of OU, David Bourne, the former chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and a close personal associate of George Tenet. While Mr. Edger was in Norman in August, that's when Lattimore drove up to get Massali out of jail. And also when Edger was present, the other ticket for the other member of the Hamburg cell that was a 9/11 hijacker, Mr. Ziad Jarrad, was purchased at the OU library.
I know, for what you're speaking of, this Lattimore actually drove up to Minneapolis to try to bail Massui out of prison after he'd been put in prison, but of course they weren't about to let him go because they thought he was going to be part of some sort of plot.
There's another person that was in jail with him. His other roommate, named Moshe Alatas, who's a Saudi Arabian, a wealthy Saudi, tied with Bayoumi out in San Diego in that cell that was left out of the famous 28 missing pages. Mr. Alatas was his roommate who drove Massali originally to Minnesota. Both of them were imprisoned while they were being questioned. Lattimore succeeded in getting Alatas out of jail, but didn't get Massali out of jail. While they were there, the FBI tape recorder, and this is court document, the imam at the Nadia, the imam at the OU mosque, talking to Alatas and about him and Massali being on jihad. That was all this stuff I'm telling you was deliberately left out of the recent Massali trial, and particularly Lattimore's involvement. After 9/11, in the end of September, the FBI finally got around to arresting Lattimore to get him off the streets, and they convicted him on a lesser charge, and he's back on the streets again, helping people with Al-Fukra. And they know this. And the person who prosecuted him to get him off the hook is a guy named John Richter, who had Chertoff's job when Chertoff left the criminal division of the Department of Justice. It just goes on like this. But Lattimore, let me repeat this again, he worked with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, he was Massali's, Al-Hazmi, and Al-Shii's roommates. He bailed Al-Ada out of jail, tried to get Massali out of jail. Lattimore did. And Al-Ada is one of these people that was a protected Saudi. They've also allowed to walk, and yet he was involved with the hijackers out in San Diego. He traveled from Oklahoma out to San Diego.
Well, it seems that they're doing everything they can to protect the Saudis, to protect the hijackers, and the people who helped the hijackers.
Well, as I said, there was a joint congressional report, the House and Senate Intelligence Committee, on 9/11, before the 9/11 Commission ever met. And out of that report, 28 pages were redacted. I called the person who wrote the report on the House side. His name is James Lewis. He worked directly for Porter Goss. He threatened me directly on the phone when I approached him with this information. He said I would get a visit from the FBI and I would be prosecuted because the information I was telling him had been retroactively classified by the President of the United States. And when he wrote his report, he deliberately left out the 28 pages for the President that include the information I just described.
So obviously they don't want the American people to know. But of course the other thing is by deleting those 28 pages, we tend to focus the attention of the American people on the Saudis as if somehow the Saudis are primarily responsible. In fact, they think they're really playing games with our minds. They focus our attention on the Saudis, on the Pakistanis, on the Mossad. They have all of these conspiracy theories. If you don't want the government's conspiracy theory, why don't you try one of these others? Because they don't want us to really find out what's really happening.
Yeah, we're playing a shell game here.
Right.
You know, I want to mention this before I go on. We're going to name the nine people here. We're almost there. But I want to mention one other thing while I'm on this. I not only contacted the 9/11 congressional hearings and a number of senators, including Senator Graham's office, Senator Shelby's office, who said this shouldn't have been classified in the first place. But I also wrote a report specifically for the Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert, at his request. And I wrote a letter of recommendation at his request, and then I was presented to, the skids were greased for me, to present this to the 9/11 Commission Chief Legal Counsel, John Roth, who worked for Mr. Zelikoff. And Mr. Hastert reversed himself to have the 9/11 Commission go forward based on the recommendations he wanted me to have written for this commission. And I'd like to tell you what the recommendation was and then what happened.
All right, fine. Well, you're going to have to hold that off for just a moment here. And I guess this evening has been Pratt Briley. And for those of you who are listening, this will be a two-hour talk. If you'd like to get the complete 2 hours, well, you can contact our ministry at 1-800-544-8927. Pat has dedicated his life to trying to get the truth out, and until you know some of these names, why they're a little bit confusing. But the one thing that's not confusing is these people, these terrorists, are being protected by people highly placed in our government, and the question is, why? Well, go ahead, Pat.
Well, we've named six. I'll quickly go over them. Husseini, Ahmad, Khalil, Lattimore, his Muslim name is Manepta, and also these two people, a man and a woman, that are involved in this criminal enterprise. Now, I want to go back to another point here. I said earlier that a number of these people had been photographed all together shortly after the Oklahoma City bombing at Khalil's body shop. Husseini had been photographed with these man and the woman and also Dr. Khalil and with some other Iraqis. Well, the other point is that the criminal enterprise that is still operational in Oklahoma City that the FBI knows about but will not move against, will not even prosecute them for regular crimes, that criminal enterprise was provided housing for Melvin Lattimore from 1988 until right up until 2001, and Mr. Lattimore used their addresses at a number of times on a number of his documents, and we have a number of public records to show that. We have all the detailed information you'd ever want on these people, and I won't describe what it is, but it's all the public records that you can possibly get, and it shows that Mr. Lattimore was involved in this criminal enterprise that was operating to help Al-Husseini and Khalil help McVeigh do the Oklahoma City bombing.
So are you suggesting that the government knew about this?
I know this, that the government knows about this now and has known about it certainly since the Oklahoma City bombing and never questioned Husseini, avoided prosecuting Lattimore when they were told, remember, they were told, FBI own informant told them that Lattimore was involved in the Oklahoma City bombing. This came out in Lattimore's trial. One other thing about Melvin Lattimore, two other things. The bureau chief for the the Fox bureau chief in Dallas, Russ Cosby, told me 2 years ago that he had a number of witnesses to have McVeigh with Lattimore in a number of places in Oklahoma City before and at the time of Oklahoma City bombing. But I had witnesses, and this is a very important story. Melvin Lattimore was with McVeigh's car, and two other men, two of them we've identified as FBI informants, James Rosenkranz, a drug dealer that lives next door to Fourier McVeigh and testified at the federal trials and state trials and grand juries. And also with him was an Army private who worked for the FBI, who was a provocateur named Sean Kinney. These two men were with Melvin Lattimore at the Traveler's Aid down the street from the Murrah Building one day before the bombing. Six different FBI agents came and talked to four witnesses on this for over 9 months, browbeat them, tried to get them to change the story, took almost no notes, and wrote up no 302s.
Hold up. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and this is Pat Briley, and Pat is suggesting that there would appear to be that there are people within the FBI who had been ordered not to come up with the proper information and to try to browbeat people into changing their stories so that so that the truth would not come out. Well, this is the time when I'm going to have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and it's vitally important that we understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle of being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And there really are wicked people. Most people are good, but there's a small group of people, and they play musical chairs. They move from one government department to another, and they're always in key positions. Whether it be Mr. Chertoff, who was over there in the Philippines in the 1995 time, and now we find him in key positions in government today in the Office of Homeland Security, or certainly some of these agent provocateurs who are obviously paid by our government promoting Islamic terrorism, not only in this country but throughout the world. We've created the best enemy money could buy. If you'd like to get the information to verify what's being said, why, you really want to get our three pamphlet set. It's called $4.911. It's based upon a number of newsletters we've written, and we put them into pamphlet form. It will give you tremendous insight into what happened that time. We have two tape sets on Oklahoma City, a bombing, including interviews with Ambrose Evans Pritchard and Carol Howe's attorney, Clark Brewster, who tells how they tried to put an innocent young woman in prison. What was her crime? Why, she was an American patriot who infiltrated a terrorist group to try to keep the BATF abreast of their terrorist plans, and they wanted to send her to prison. Why? Because they could not let the people know what she would have said had she gone to the McVeigh trial, and that was, she had told the government ahead of time about the plan to blow up the Murrah building. You want to get our 2-4 tapes out in Oklahoma City. We have a couple of videos on Oklahoma City, and we have something called the Oklahoma City Bombing Special. And you can get those things by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Had we done what was right and had the truth come out about the Oklahoma City bombing, why, there never would have been a 911. But if they could get away with killing 168 Americans, why not get away with killing 2,700 Americans? And if you question what I'm saying, just tell me, why did Building 7 come down at about 5:20 on the evening of September 11th? Why did the whole base of Building 7 explode? And the building came down like a controlled demolition. We could ask a couple of other questions. Why have the American people never been told that there were military exercises on the morning of 9-1-1 that simulated hijacking of American planes and crashing them into buildings? That story is told this month in the Vanity Fair magazine, the September issue. I suggest you get it and read it or pull it down on the Internet. How could you conceal the fact that there were military exercises that morning that were simulating hijacking of planes? And you do that because you control the media. We must understand the past, or, of course, we're going to lose America. We are on our way towards war with Iran. A civil war probably will be underway in Mexico within several months. A major civil war there, and this is being financed by Venezuela and by Cuba. But if you have not yet seen my video entitled World Revolution, where I interview the American ambassador to Cuba at the time of the Cuban Revolution, who tells me how we intentionally brought Fidel Castro to power knowing he was a communist. We brought Fidel Castro to power knowing he was a communist. The video is called World Revolution. There's so much more. Give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please don't forget we're holding our yearly conference on the 29th of October. You'll have to have reservations. That's the 29th of October. And then please pray for America. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And this evening our guest is Pat Briley, who's been studying what happened on April 19th, 1995, since that very morning when the Murrah building was attacked. And his wife was told by a couple of the wives of FBI agents that the FBI agents had been notified ahead of time about the coming attack on the Murrah building. And Pat was, of course, subsequently threatened and told never to reveal what had been said to his wife. But anyway, pick the story up there, Pat.
Well, we were talking about Melvin Lattimore being at the Traveler's Aid in Oklahoma City the day before the Oklahoma City bombing. The Traveler's Aid was one block just to the west of the Murrah building, very, very close. And he was with McVeigh's car. We believe McVeigh may or may not have been in the car, but it's definitely McVeigh's car. The Mercury Marquis that everybody remembers seeing that was eventually, he was stopped in by a highway patrol trooper hangar. But Mr. Lattimore was also in accompaniment with a drug dealer, James Rosencran, who now documents show was an FBI provocateur and informant, and also an Army private named Sean Kenney that also FBI documents now show was an FBI provocateur and informant.
You get an awful lot of provocateurs and informants, don't we?
Yes, we do.
It seems like we've infiltrated all of these organizations to protect the American people, of course.
Well, when I say provocateur and informant, I want people to understand that's not just my interpretation. Jesse Trinidou in Salt Lake City is involved in a litigation with the federal government really over the death of his brother, and has received under FOIA requests in federal court order a number of FBI teletypes memos, including memos sent to the Oklahoma City FBI field office and also from Louis Free, describing these informants. And so the documents, even though they've been heavily redacted, you still can tell who they are. And as a matter of fact, we got lucky because they sent us two sets of documents and they've been redacted in two different places. So you overlay them and you see basically the documents. So that's why I'm talking about Rosencrans and Sean Kenney, as well as, but these aren't necessarily terrorists. They were FBI informants, but you can call them terrorists. And they were provocateurs. But Melvin Lattimore was
a provocateur. You mean somebody who will commit, who try to get other people to commit crimes, to provoke people to commit
Correct.
Crimes, as then, of course, you can get them. But it's totally immoral and illegal, but they do it anyway.
Well, they talked about Oklahoma City being a failed sting operation. Well, if you're going to do a sting operation, you better have some fail safe, and they either didn't or somebody deliberately pulled the plug. They still should be held criminally and civilly responsible for it. But I'm going to get back to Lattimore. I want to tell you something else here. You made a statement that we might have been able to stop 9/11 if we had done the proper thing about Oklahoma City bombing. You don't know how right you really are, sir. I mean, you're a brilliant man. Don't get me wrong. But I'm going to give you another proof of this.
I'm flattered to get you almost anything. Go ahead, Pat.
Well, no, you follow and understand American history better than most, and I commend you for that. But it turns out that the four witnesses that were browbeaten at the Traveler's Aid, I helped them draft letters that were sent to the Attorney General of the United States, Mr. Ashcroft, and also the Inspector General, Glenn Fine, in June through August of 2001, and they were presented in person to Mr. Ashcroft in his residence by a friend of mine, General Benton K. Parton. Mr. Ashcroft got the information. So did Mr. Fine. If they had acted on it, they would have stopped 9/11, and yet they covered it up. They lied about it. But maybe they didn't want to stop it. I don't know, because
hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Pat Briley, go right ahead.
Well, I was just explaining that the witnesses at Traveler's Aid sent letter to the Attorney General of the United States, Mr. Ashcroft, and the Inspector General of the Department of Justice, Glenn Fine, talking about what happened at the Traveler's Aid with Melvin Lattimore, who was later involved in 9/11. If the Attorney General had acted properly on that information rather than covered it up, we would not have had 9/11. Now, the other possibility is he knew that Melvin Lattimore was involved in all these other things and was involved in 9/11 and didn't want it stopped. I don't know which it is, but he got that information in time. And I'd like to point out a finding of the 9/11 Commission was that the acting FBI director at the time, Thomas Pickering, went to Ashcroft twice in the summer of 2001 and warned him of pending al-Qaeda plane attacks in the United States, and Ashcroft is quoted saying, "I don't want to be told about this anymore." That's a finding of the 9/11 Commission.
And, of course, Ashcroft then, under oath, said, "I never said that. It isn't true at all." So one of the two is lying, but nobody ever tried to find out.
Well, if he denies that he was told by General Parton about these letters and this documentation, I've got copies of the letter, and General Parton will testify to it, too. So Ashcroft would be lying about that, too.
Well, of course, we do know that Attorney General Ashcroft stopped flying commercial airliners. He would only fly on regularly chartered jets, chartered by the government, of course, after, I think, the early summer of 2001. In other words, people thought that he knew the terrorist attack was coming, and he didn't want to be on one of those planes that got blown out of the sky.
And who is he protecting? He and the Department of Justice, Mr. Richter, Mr. Chertoff, all these people are protecting Melvin Lattimore, the black Muslim al-Qaeda Hamas operator out of Oklahoma City that was involved in the 9/3 World Trade Center, the Oklahoma City bombing, and 9/11. And they're protecting him, and the guy's still walking the streets.
How was he involved in 9/11?
He was Massawi's roommate.
All right, fine.
He was al-Hazmi's roommate,
right.
Al-Shehi's roommate. He was seen with Muhammad Atta in a number of places in Oklahoma City as Atta was passing through. He was al-Atta's roommate. Now, al-Shehi and al-Hazmi and al-Atta, al-Shehi, al-Hazmi, and Atta were 9/11 hijackers. Massawi was a wannabe. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who's al-Qaeda, sent Massawi to live with Melvin Lattimore. I would say he probably knew about 9/11 and facilitated it. I would say so.
All right, fine.
And that's why, you know, if they had acted in time, Mr. Ashcroft, they would have been able to nail Mr. Lattimore.
Well, I want you to know that since Mr. Ashcroft has left his position as Attorney General, he heads a large lobbying organization where he makes a lot of money, I know, contacting people in government to get them to give special favors to his clients. So he's been well rewarded. Well, we're just Dr. Stan, our guest is Pat Briley. We're talking about Sidney, this Mr. Lattimore, and the fact that there was a definite relationship not only to the 1995 bombing, but also to the 2001 bombing. And Mr. Ashcroft and government officials just don't seem to be in any way concerned about it. So pick up the story there.
I want to describe the last three people, the Middle Eastern terrorists that were involved in the city bombing, who happened to also be involved in the 9/3 World Trade Center. That Mr. Chertoff and Mr. Patrick Fitzgerald lied about and are covering up to this day. I want to talk about them, and I also want to talk about my report to Speaker Hastert in the 9/11 Commission called Counterterrorism Antecedents for the 9/11 Attack that described everything I just told you.
Was your special report actually given to the 9/11 Commission?
Yes, it was, and it was discussed with him personally. It dwarfs the Abel Danger situation.
I know, of course, but the amazing thing is that all of that information has been sealed for 50 years because they wanted to protect people's privacy.
They sandbagged the American people. They sandbagged the truth. They sandbagged at least Mr. Hastert's initial efforts. Mr. Ashcroft now doesn't want to talk because he's a coward, but I can prove that I discussed this fully with him, and I will tell you that because the American people need to hear this. I'm going to come back to that in a minute, okay? But I want to name these last three guys because this ties in the FBI and all these other people we're talking about, and Mr. Lattimore. These three guys are named Honest, and by the way, this has been written about. It's in a number of newspapers. If you look real hard, and I saved these from a long time ago, these three men were arrested in Oklahoma and in Texas right the day of the Oklahoma City bombing. They were seen by a witness named Debbie Burdick with McVeigh just north of the murder building right before the bomb went off.
All right, these were John Doe, then 2-3.
No, I can name these three men, and I will, and I've checked with attorneys. This is proper and legal to do this. Anas Siddiqui, that's A-N-A-S. Asad Siddiqui, that's S-I-D-D-I-Q-Y. And Muhammad Shafi.
And this has been ripped up in the newspapers and has been verified. Okay,
one of them was arrested in Oklahoma City. The other two, they were all together, but they separated. One was arrested in Oklahoma City. The other two were arrested in Dallas. The FBI intervened to get them released. I know the FBI really well who intervened, and I've complained to Congress about him going back before 1990. I know a lot about him. That's another story. And he was involved in these terrorist cells, by the way. His name is Floyd Zims, and I've written about this. And so I'm not, you know, if he wants to sue me, he can sue me, but I've already written about it. And I'm a personal witness to this.
I would have to say I don't know anything at all about the FBI agent. So
anyway, Mr. Siddiqui, Anas and Asad Siddiqui, and Muhammad Shafi were involved in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. They were trained by Ali Muhammad. They worked with USEF. They worked with Salim. They worked with the FBI. The Houston Chronicle, a number of major newspapers, described this in the write-up when they were first arrested. But there was a news blackout about this in Oklahoma. The FBI, Janet Reno, denied they were ever arrested, denied there was ever a 302 on this, et cetera.
I know you mentioned they worked with Salem. He was the FBI informant who had infiltrated the terror cell in New York City.
He was paid to actually go out and recruit people to help him bomb tunnels and the World Trade Center bombing.
He was actually an agent provocateur
who
had infiltrated the terror cell that surrounded the Blind Sheik, Omar Rahman.
By the way, there was another bomb maker named Yassin. Yassin was picked up by the FBI and squatted around New York City for 2 weeks and allowed to go to all their safe houses and show how they built the bomb and everything. And then they gave him a ticket and money to leave the country and let him go wherever he wants. I think they sent him to Iraq. I know about this because Leslie Stahl did a documentary. I saw it. She interviewed the U.S. attorneys who were involved in the decision to allow this. And yet Mr. Cheney, the vice president, said 2 years ago, we have proof that Iraq was involved in the 93 World Trade Center bombing because Mr. Yassin was a bomb maker working for Iraq. Well, that's not what really happened. The FBI knowingly let him go and sent him on his way. He could have gone anywhere he wanted. He did go to Iraq.
And, of course, at any time they could have contacted Iraq and demanded his extradition. They had never asked, never asked to have him extradited from Iraq, and you have to ask yourself why.
That's right. Okay, but let me go back to the Siddiquis and the Shafties again. Once again, the FBI intervened to have them released, yet they were involved in the 93 World Trade Center bombing. They were with McVeigh in Oklahoma City, and we believe they, of course, knew Lattimore and probably knew Khalid Muhammad and Ramzi Youssef, who were the indicted people for the 93 World Trade Center bombing. But one other important thing. Remember in this list of six, of nine, I said that Dr. Khalil hired the Iraqi Husseini. He's in these pictures with all these guys. And he's also hired Abraham Ahmad, and he's known Hamas and PLO. And he's still allowed to operate. He's protected. The DOJ protected him when he was before this federal grand jury and shut it down. Another thing about Dr. Khalil. There is a person with the name Samir Khalil that's on the official, if you know where to look, the official Department of Justice, FBI, unindicted co-conspirator list for the 93 World Trade Center bombing. And also a man who has the same name as his brother. Maybe that's a coincidence. Maybe they're just two different Dr. Khalils. I don't know, but that's what I just told you is fact. So so the Siddiquis and the Shafties. Now, I have another important thing to tell you. This is real important. Oklahoma City Bomb Task Force Inspector, who's in charge of these, you know, these thousands of FBI agents scurrying the countryside looking for other John Doe's, Danny Diefenbaugh. That's his name. Mr. Diefenbaugh write about the involvement of Shafi and Siddiqui in Oklahoma City bombing, because in January of 2001, when 4,000 pages of FBI documents were found that delayed the execution of McVeigh, a bunch of them were found in his office. But you know what they found in his? He had been moved to Dallas to be the special agent in charge of Dallas. In Mr. Diefenbaugh's office were found the FBI 302 showing the arrest of Anas and Asad Siddiqui and Muhammad Shafi and their release. And he lied about it and covered it up. That's it. But one more thing about Danny Diefenbaugh. Danny Diefenbaugh and Oklahoma City FBI agents were tracking Hamas people who were involved in Oklahoma City bombing and Al-Qaeda people involved in Oklahoma City bombing before, during, and after Oklahoma City bombing, right up until 9/11. And, in fact, Mr. Diefenbaugh used Dallas police officers to track Al-Qaeda members, including Bin Laden's secretary and a lot of other Al-Qaeda people that are still operating in the United States. Around the world, they tracked them, including in Dallas. The police chief, Terrell Bolton, got angry because he wasn't told about it. You can check with Valerie Williams, the K-Move, I believe is the name of the TV station, Dallas, to cover the story. That was Diefenbaugh. I complained to Congress about this. What's this policy of allowing Al-Qaeda to operate without getting them off the streets? That's what Diefenbaugh was doing. And I was involved in a special meeting arranged where Mrs. Davis, with her attorney, met with one of the FBI agents to try to give him this evidence in January of 1999.
Now, is that David Shippers?
No, at that time it was Dan Nelson.
All right.
Now, I know David Shippers pretty, you know, I've talked to him a number of times, but this is prior to Mrs. Davis talking to Mr. Shippers. And I arranged this because I talked to the Senate Intelligence Committee, and there's a gentleman there that now is the Chief of Staff, Intelligence Committee, that put a little pressure to make them meet with him. Well, during that meeting, this FBI agent told Mrs. Davis and her husband that the FBI knew about and were tracking a number of these people associated with Hamas and tried to Oklahoma City bombing in Oklahoma and in Dallas, tracking but never getting them off the streets. It's the same. And by the way, I want to give you some proof about Hamas being involved in Oklahoma City bombing. And also the FBI tracking and knowing about Hamas involvement. And this is this criminal enterprise that I've described earlier that's being run by this man and woman that backing these other seven or eight people that I've described. The FBI has been monitoring Hamas ever since 1988, Oklahoma City, ever since Azzam came. And Azzam was really a co-founder of Hamas as well as Al-Qaeda. But the FBI knew that there were a number of Hamas cells in Oklahoma City, in Oklahoma area, that were involved in Oklahoma City bombing. And who said so? Dave McCurdy. He was the former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. He's a congressman from Oklahoma. In early May 1995, he wrote an article to the Oklahoma Gazette saying so. I have a copy of it. When he did that, the FBI and a number of people in government came out and ruined his career and called him a liar. And yet he described the Hamas cells that were being tracked in Oklahoma. And I also want to point out a congressman from Oklahoma who now is running for governor, Ernest Istook, told two deputy sheriffs the night of the Oklahoma City bombing, after it occurred, that he and the FBI had been warned of a Middle Eastern attack on the Murrah building the week before. The FBI tried to threaten those deputy sheriffs, the same FBI agent that threatened those deputy sheriffs, also the same FBI agent that threatened me. His name is James Carlisle. And Mr. Ernest Istook testified before the county grand jury that it wasn't true, and the deputy sheriffs testified that it was true. The story about the Mr. Istook and the FBI being told beforehand. I have written articles where I provide the court documents that show that the FBI and the U.S. prosecutors admitted to Judge Mace in a preliminary hearing in 1996 that they did have prior warning and they warned the entire federal family. But they didn't want to create a 302 on it, and they said that during the preliminary hearing.
Now, for Judge Mace was the
presiding federal judge
who presided over the McBay trial.
McBay and Nichols trial.
Right.
Yes, sir. I've got the court documents, and I tried to present it to Congressman Rohrabacher's chief of staff, Mr. Dykstra. He refused to accept it.
Well, of course, they don't want to accept this information, because once they have accepted, they can't deny that they knew about it. They've got to have a plausible deniability. Have you ever seen the letter that McBay wrote to his sister, admitting, saying that he was a member of a secret special forces team?
Yes.
Do you have a copy of that?
No.
Okay.
But I have read it on the Internet.
Okay, fine. Well, I think
people
it's important to realize that. Have you ever wondered why they executed Timothy McVay so quickly? Ordinarily, it takes many years to execute a criminal who's killed somebody. The government of McVay immediately. I wonder if it's because he said he was from the special forces. Well, go right ahead.
Well, anyway, to recap, we've named nine people that were in Oklahoma City that were directly involved in Oklahoma City bombing, helping McVeigh and Nichols. Nine. That are known to the federal government, have been known to the federal government certainly since the Oklahoma City bombing. They've taken no action to move against them and done anything, if anything, they've protected them. And the evidence on this is profound and strong. And this information, by the way, including the latest, was given to the FBI in a series of memos and face-to-face meetings with FBI agents and also special investigators. The FBI agents we talked to had an open mind and thought it was very compelling, but then they got shut down. And I'd like to point out another thing. We've had last year in Oklahoma, actually University of Oklahoma, an OU bombing. I've written two articles on that. And there were terrorist groups involved in that, and we believe probably Al-Fukra. And the FBI, and I was directly involved in knowing about this firsthand, the FBI out of Washington was lied about the terrorist connection to the OU bombing.
Now tell us about the OU bombing. I've never heard of it.
Well, October 1st, last year, at a football game in Norman, Oklahoma, and that's where Lattimore lived, and that's where Massawi lived, and that's where there's a lot of terrorist cells in the mosque and the Muslim Student Union, et cetera.
And that's where the Norman, the Airman Flight School
that's
is.
That's correct. It is really a hotbed of terrorism in the United States. It is one of the leading centers in the United States, and that's not an exaggeration. Anyway, there was a white student named Joel Hendricks from Colorado. He was an engineering student. And during the Kansas State game, there was an explosion, and he was blown up while sitting on a bench right outside the stadium. And he was blown up with a very volatile explosive called TATP. It's made with peroxide. It's very volatile, very powerful. And by the way, that was one of the materials that was supposedly going to be used by the terrorists flying the planes in from London to the United States. It was the same material used by Al-Fukra member Richard Reed, the shoe bomber. It's the weapon of choice by Al-Fukra. And, but anyway, Joel Hendricks had also visited a large feed store trying to buy 1,000 pounds of ammonium nitrate shortly before the bombing. Joel Hendricks had attended the OU Mosque. He attended the Oklahoma City Mosque. He had a Pakistani roommate named Fazal Chima and many other Middle Eastern roommates that we have strong beliefs were tied to Middle Eastern terrorism. But in his room were found over hundreds of rounds of live explosives, ammunition, artillery rounds. And there were special findings of the Norman police, that bomb squad, that this was not a suicide, that he had, it may have been an accident, but he had intended to enter the stadium and blow up people in the stadium, and he had accomplices who fled at the scene.
In other words, he got blown up by accident.
Yes. And he had tried, there were witnesses that, where he tried to enter the stadium, but they wanted to frisk his backpack, and he couldn't allow that, so he came back and was sitting on the bench when the TAT bomb blew up. But here's the point I want to show you. That was October 1st. October 2nd, which was a Sunday, the U.S. attorney who had come to Oklahoma again, the one that got Lattimore off, Mr. Richter, and also the FBI special agent charged, Mr. Salvador Hernandez, and also the chancellor of OU, David Warren, issued a...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Patrick is telling us about the Oklahoma University bombing, which I'd never heard of, but it occurred on October 1st. What year was that, 2005?
Yes, sir, last year.
And of course, there were one of the students there who had a lot of contacts with what would appear to be radical Islamic students, although this man apparently was not a radical Islamic individual, but he actually blew himself up with an explosive device, a peroxide acetone bomb. So that was the 1st of October, and then the 2nd of October, and pick up the story there.
Well, the chancellor of OU, the head of the FBI in Oklahoma City, Mr. Gonzalez, and also the U.S. attorney, Mr. Richter, issued a press release. This is October 2nd, the morning of October 2nd, saying absolutely no connection to Middle Eastern terrorism. It was suicide. It was less than 24 hours later all the evidence points to it was a terrorist attack, certainly an incitement of a terrorist attack. He had been in Islamic mosque, and he'd been with people that were associated with Algeria and Al-Qaeda, and also people with Pakistan and Pakistani ISI. He had been associated with all this, and yet the FBI went out of its way intentionally to say, less than 24 hours, it could not have, it had to be suicide, when any of the evidence was exactly opposite. And by the way, there's been a pattern of this across the country now for the last 3 or 4 years, where they'll say immediately, it's not Islamic terrorist related or incited when it is. And I can give you about 5 examples. Mr. Hugh Hewitt wrote an article about this yesterday, and Neil Bortz picked up on his program, and he mentioned the OU bombing as well as some of these other incidents, where the FBI has this policy of immediately, prematurely, before they can possibly conduct an investigation, just like they did in OU, saying, oh, it can't be Islamic terrorism. They're dumbing down the American people, making them think there isn't a problem when there really is a problem.
Well,
and I'd like to make one other point about the OU bombing. I'm an ear witness to the following. I was talking to the Oklahoma City news station, KWTV, a CBS affiliate, who was leading the investigation on this, when the FBI called and threatened them and shut down their investigation and told them. I heard this, by the way. They had the speakerphone on, and they allowed me to listen to it. And they were talking to Brian Eckert, the station news director, manager. And they told them, we do not want you to try to locate the roommate, Fazal Chim, anymore. We don't know anymore, and we don't care, and you shouldn't either. They shut down that investigation. That's highly improper. They've lied about it. And I want to repeat, the same guy for the Department of Justice that lied in that press release on October 2nd is the same guy who, in November 2001, this is John Richter, deliberately got Lattimore only 18 months when he was told by the BATF he was involved in Oklahoma City bombing, when he knew he was involved with the 9/11 hijackers, and when he also knew that he had been involved in the 93 World Trade Center. That's John Richter, same guy shut all this down. And he came to Oklahoma right before the OU bombing. I wrote an article a month before the OU bombing saying, predicting something bad was happening because Richter had come back to town. It's on the Internet. This is terrible. The situation is terrible. But one of the things I wanted to get to tonight was talking about the 9/11 commission report I gave to Hastert, and also some reasons why this is happening, why they're not enforcing the law. You know, they're not enforcing the law in the United States on purpose. And it's against the law to intentionally not enforce the law. It's a violation of the oath to the Constitution. It's a violation of the Constitution. It's against the law. It's an impeachable offense that can also lead to prosecution. The laws they're not enforcing are, and this is all interrelated, they're not enforcing, obviously, illegal immigration laws. They're not enforcing the laws against known terrorists that they know are committing terrorist acts and criminal acts and conspiracy and raising funds. They're still not prosecuting all those people who they know to do so, and they're deliberately leaving them on the streets. That's a violation of law, not enforcing those laws, and there are FBI agents who complain about this too. And then they're not enforcing espionage laws against the leading backer of these terrorist groups around the world and in the United States, Communist China. There are 3,000 Chinese front companies operating in the United States, according to the FBI. Mr. Bush has refused, according to the FBI, to enforce the laws against them and carry out the recommendations of the Cox Report that came out after Chinagate in 1998. And yet the Chinese are helping the terrorists, are helping Iran, helped Iraq, helping North Korea. The Chinese are leading backer of terrorism in the world today. You cannot have a war on terrorism without addressing China. The war on terrorism is designed to fail unless it addresses China.
But of course, Pat, who is the major financier of Communist China today? It is the United States. It's Goldman Sachs Bank. It's Morgan Chase Bank. It's the International Monetary Fund, the Agency for International Development, the Agency for Far Eastern Development. Yes, why would we be financing the people who are financing the terrorists if we're really involved in a war on terror?
Illegal aliens, also can become terrorists.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Pat Briley. So, Pat, pick up the story again.
Well, I promised you that I would talk about my encounter with the 9/11 Commission and Speaker Hastert.
All right, fine. Now, initially, by Speaker Hastert wanted you to go ahead and prepare the report and get it to the 9/11 Commission.
Yes, and this also covers part of a question that you asked me earlier, is why is this being allowed to happen? You know, to allow known terrorist groups to run around the country, people that they know are involved in these attacks, they don't get off the streets even though they knew they were involved before and they still could do another one. You know, so it's going to get into answering that question, the why on that, too. Okay, in February, March 2004, Speaker Hastert made it known to the public that he intended to block the continuation of the 9/11 Commission because he said it would be a political football, et cetera. And he had a lot of power and he would probably succeed. I contacted Speaker Hastert's office and spoke to his chief of staff, John B. Russell. And I described to him a lot of things I've told you on the program tonight, including the problem I had with the 9/11 congressional staff member, James Lewis, that worked for Porter Goss, who came and went as a CIA director. And I said to Mr. Russell that it was a policy of the FBI under not only the Clinton administration, but the Bush administration, to allow known terrorist groups themselves, including al-Qaeda, to operate for years in the United States and not get them off the streets. And not just because Robert Wright said so, but because I told him about a series of articles in the New York Times quoting senior White House officials saying that. The articles were written by Mr. Bingaman, who also helped co-produce a PBS frontline documentary about the same thing. The documentary was about the Lackawanna al-Qaeda cells. At the time, there were six al-Qaeda cells in the United States. I told Mr. Russell about the PBS documentary and, of course, the New York Times articles. And he told me that he had seen that documentary, and he was very impressed, and he said he agreed with my characterization. What was my characterization? On that documentary, the head of the FBI Counterterrorism Center, it was called the Joint FBI-CIA Counterterrorism Center, was Dale Watson. FBI side, CI side was Cofer Black. They gave limited testimony for the 9/11 Commission. Mr. Watson, on that documentary, said, "We assured the White House with a 99% certainty that we really didn't have to take any of these al-Qaeda cells off the street and nothing bad would happen. We could track and follow them all. But the White House told us we had to do something about al-Qaeda, you know, in the aftermath of 9/11, had to do something. The public knew too much about it." So they did. They got one of them off.
Hold that right there. All right, this is Dr. Stan, and Pat is just saying that there are people at the highest levels of our government in the FBI, and he's mentioned one of them, Cofer Black, and another gentleman, and they had apparently told government committees that they knew about the al-Qaeda terrorist cells in this country, and they did not have to take them off the street. And then, of course, because some people were offended by that, they got one of them off the streets, but they're letting the al-Qaeda and other Islamic terrorist cells operate in the United States, and they know what they're doing. Would that be a fair statement?
That's not only a fair statement, but I got a new proof of this. Former Inspector General of the Department of Homeland Security, Clark Clint Irvine, this was covered a week ago, a Walnut Daily story, came out and publicly complained about the following. He said the CIA provided a list of 1,000 known al-Qaeda members to Robert Mueller for action to get him off the streets. This was in the last couple of months. Mr. Mueller refused and said, "We're not going to take action until they commit a crime." And yet I like to respectfully suggest that Mr. Mueller is nuts, because these people already are committing crimes, because under the new terrorism laws, all you have to do is conspire to commit terrorism, raise money for terrorism, and a lot of them are involved in criminal enterprises violating just regular civil and state laws. And yet Mr. Mueller says, "Oh, we're not going to get them off the streets." And this dovetails with what happened on that PBS documentary that I was telling Hastert's chief of staff about. Because after Watson made that ridiculous statement, a CIA official came on and criticized him and said, "That's nuts. That's crazy. We should be getting these guys off the streets." Okay, Mr. Russell, the chief of staff for Hastert, says, after talking to Hastert, "We agree with you. This is bad policy. This has got to change. You know, there's too many illegal immigrants that can become terrorists. These guys can have WMDs. Once we know their test, we need to get them off the streets. Mr. Hastert has asked me to have you write a report for him for the 9/11 Commission, and we would like you to talk to the chief legal counsel, and he gave me his name and phone number and gave me an introduction. His name was John Roth. He worked for Mr. Zelikoff. So I called Mr. Roth, and I sent my report to Mr. Hastert and to Mr. Roth. I'm sorry to say, and by the way, the recommendation that Mr. Hastert asked me to write through his chief of staff was that the 9/11 Commission review this policy of allowing known terrorists to operate for years to track and follow them without getting them off the streets, and see if they recommend making some changes. Also, the chief of staff said that that was the major reason why Hastert reversed himself to have the 9/11 Commission go forward when he was originally going to block it. That's what I was told. And yet, when the report came out, nothing about this. You still there?
Yes, certainly am. And
I'm talking so loud. I'm sorry.
No, you're doing fine there, Pat.
So you have the 9/11 Commission sandbagging not only me, the report, but at least Mr. Hastert at one moment in time. And yet, when I call back Mr. John Russell and Mr. Hastert's office and try to talk, they don't want to talk about it anymore.
Well, I think you have to understand that the purpose of the 9/11 Commission was not to reveal what happened, but
no.
to conceal what happened, and it is so full of lies and half-truths, and there's a wonderful new book out. It's written by Tom Keene and Lee Hamilton,
right.
The co-chairman, both of them from the Council on Foreign Relations, and actually, if you read the book and you know anything about what's going on, it should convince you firmly that they knew ahead of time. And they did not try to stop the attack.
And it's even worse than that, because in that book these gentlemen say, and they've also said it publicly, that they knew a number of the witnesses that were testifying before them were lying, and they were originally going to refer them to the Justice Department for prosecution, but decided not to.
Well, of course, those were really the military people who lied about what happened that morning. And so what did they do? They referred it to the military to investigate the military.
It's turned the problem inside on itself.
Yeah. Right.
And not only that, but here's the other problem. It's one thing to cover it up. If they want to cover it up, I think that's bad. But if they at least fix it, even if it's behind closed door and nobody gets in trouble, but at least they fix it. This is the point. They didn't fix it. With the Patriot Act and the billions on the Department of Homeland Security, they're not enforcing the law, even the new laws, much less the old laws to get the terrorists off the streets. The very reason that Hastert said that he wanted them to go ahead with the 9/11 Commission and answer my recommendation to review this policy and change the policy and fix it. They still have not fixed it, the proof being that Mr. Mueller still says we're not going to move against 1,000 al-Qaeda terrorists that the CIA has just identified to us.
I think it's important for our listeners, one thing I hope they'll learn tonight, is that there's not only 1,000 al-Qaeda terrorists. I mean, there are, I don't know how many Hamas terrorists. They're Al-Qaeda
terrorists. I'm going to tell you what the government says about how many Hamas, how many Hezbollah, how many Al-Fuqa agents there are in the United States.
All right, you tell us. Where is the information coming from?
Okay, Bob Graham wrote a book. He's the former chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. You can Google this, you can read in this book, you can find stories on the Internet. This is in 2003, he says then there were at least 300 known Hamas agents operating in the United States. Now, these are the professionals, you know, known to how to build bombs. These are the guys that go out and recruit cells and train everybody else. So when there's 300 Hamas agents, there may be up to 3,000 Hamas recruitees. You see, and that's a pattern that's been happening in the United States. When they roll up a cell recently, like in Atlanta or some other places, they have two guys that form the nucleus that are real terrorist leaders, and they've gone out and recruited 10 other guys.
Yeah, but how many of these are agent provocateurs on the FBI's payroll?
A lot, because there are a lot of cases where the FBI has come out in court that they paid people to be a provocateur.
In fact, I think a lot of these other guys
is a good example.
FBI. Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying Lodi, California is an example. You know, if they're going to do provocateur actions, then they better succeed pretty quick and stop it before something goes wrong. But on Hezbollah, there are, according to Mr. Graham in his book, 300 to 500. My information is there's more close to 10,000 to 20,000 Hezbollah. You can do the math. They're in 15 cities. The FBI, I've sent you a series of articles on this today. You can post on your website where you want to do it. The FBI says they have the capability of attacking the United States today. They have been here 20 years. They're, of course, funded by Iran. at Mr. Armitage. I realize a lot of people don't give him much credibility, but he was a former deputy secretary of state, testified before Congress that they're the A-team of terrorists inside the United States, far more organized, more capable than Al-Qaeda in delivering WMDs in the United States. This is Hezbollah. Okay? And then we have Al-Qaeda, and according to the CIA, there's at least 1,000 Al-Qaeda, and I know there's at least 5 operational Al-Qaeda cells that are continuing to watch and not get off the streets that they know are committing crimes. And then finally, Al-Fukra has been in the United States since 1978. They have 20 training centers. They're recruiting in prisons with the Marines, illegal immigrants. My estimate is there's somewhere between, there's close to 20,000 in the United States that they recruit among blacks. And and I'd like to point out something else about the FBI's program. With the Muslims, the FBI works along with the Marines and the Department of Homeland Security, Border Patrol, and Customs agents to have all of their agents attend CARE-run sensitivity training about Islam, where they're fed falsehood about Islam. I've got quotes in my articles about this. And it is a complete dumbing down in Islam and turning the FBI into Islamic operations. The Council of American Islamic Relations has been involved with the American Muslim Council, been involved with Sami Al-Aryan, Al-Amudi, all people that are known terrorists, the site terrorists involved with Hamas and Hezbollah in the United States, and a lot of people have given huge donations for the years to Rohrabacher and to G.W. Bush. It goes on, and they're still doing it. And they're also involved with Hamas. These are the Saudi Islamic extremists. And Ken Timmerman and Frank Gaffney have written several very good articles about this, document this completely. But in the United States, these people are all working together in underground terrorist network, and they form what even the FBI calls supercells. The problem is that the American people have been lied to so many times by the FBI and the Department of Justice and really the Department of Homeland Security. About every time one of these incidents occurs, oh, it's not an Islamic attack, even though it might have been incited in a mosque, and there's in universities and in business, etc., and the American people don't realize that the next terrorist attack is likely to occur inside the United States due to one of these terrorist organizations that's already here. Now, Bush says we're fighting a war in Iraq to keep the terrorists from coming here. They're already here, and it doesn't take a plane from London to arrive in the United States to attack us. They already have that capability. The FBI said so. Mr. Irvish has said so. But the American people, once again, are being dummied down. We may not have time to change policy and change some of these bad decision makers in the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, Mueller, Chertoff, et cetera. But we do have time to warn the American people, to empower them with knowledge that this underground network is all around them, to make them aware, so that they can at least be on the lookout and have some say in how they protect themselves, warn their relatives, warn their friends, etc. And I'd like to point something else about China and Mr. Chertoff, N-O-U. Mr. Chertoff awarded a contract earlier this year to Communist China, this was during the UA ports deal, by the way, to monitor U.S. shipping containers coming out of state for nuclear weapons. He gave a contract to the Communist Chinese, and the company that's running that operation is in Norman, Oklahoma, thanks to David Bourne. David Bourne is a leading proponent of Islamic groups in Norman, leading proponent of the Chinese coming to Norman to do this. And, in fact, they just set up a major Confucius Center in Norman, Oklahoma, thanks to David Bourne, who is a world government advocate, and he's former chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He's the chancellor of OU, and he's protected all these terrorist groups, including covered up the OU bombing. That is fact. I've got a number of his writings where he talks about supporting this for world government, wanting to use Islamofascism to create a world government. That is absolutely the truth about this. But you got Chertoff using the Chinese, and David Boring in bed with the Chinese. And who are the Chinese? They're the leading backer of terrorism. State sponsor and terrorist organizations, they give them safe haven to bin Laden, helping Iran give safe haven even to bin Laden types and Al-Qaeda and Zawahiri. And the Communist Chinese are never taken to task by Bush or Condoleezza Rice. And so you can't have a successful war on terrorism, even in Iraq or anywhere else, unless you address the Chinese problem. And they're not, and they're avoiding it on purpose.
In fact, there's probably not one in 1,000 Americans who realize that the Chinese communists have been helping and financing and training the Islamic terrorists.
Exactly. And yet Mr. Bush has said in this press conference about a month ago that he's all for selling any business that the United States has to communist Chinese, including military and technology. I have the quotes. I've published them. It's a sell. He's selling the country, even to the Chinese, the highest bidder.
Of course, so much of what's going on, Patrick, from a logical point of view, doesn't make sense. But if you understand it's not supposed to make sense, then it becomes logical. We are being betrayed by people who have a different agenda. They're dedicated to a world government. They're dedicated
right.
to the destruction of this country. They're actively encouraging these Islamic terrorist movements here. And when we go to war with Iran, and I believe we are going to war, I was told this morning by somebody with contacts at the highest levels of our military intelligence that the Pentagon already has the plans for the coming attack on Iran. And when that happens, I fear that these sleeper cells that have been here sometimes 20 years will be activated, and may heaven help us.
I share your fear. In fact, I wrote an article February this year called Hezbollah WMD Attacked in U.S. City. It's extremely well documented, and I happen to be a nuclear engineer, and I describe the fact that Iran already has significant amounts of plutonium and enriched uranium to build dirty radiological bombs and to give them a Hezbollah in the United States if they want to attack U.S. cities and shut them down. This is very well documented. Mr. Negroponte and Mr. Bush have lied to the American people about the extent of this. And so, well, we're worried about Iran and Iraq over there with their capabilities. I'm not saying they don't have capabilities. They've already got the capabilities with their proxies right here in Oklahoma and around the country to hit us through Hezbollah. I'd like to point out one other thing. The other thing we discovered recently, there is an operational Hezbollah cell that's funded by Iran in Oklahoma, in Norman, that we think may be involved with this other group, this Hamas group that was involved with Dr. Khalil. We've identified them. The FBI knows about. They're not moving against them either. They are funded by the Pahlavi Foundation, which is a front for Iran for Hezbollah. This is right here in Norman and Moore, Oklahoma. And yet we scream, we beg the FBI. They won't do anything. Is that incompetence or is that on purpose? We're told by FBI agents locally that they passed it on to all their supervisor. He goes to Washington, and then guys like Negroponte and Mueller shut it down.
Now, we know, for instance, there's a book called, American Jihad, written by Stephen Emerson.
Right.
He points out that in 1996, testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee by an expert on Islamic terrorism, pointing out that there were these terror cells, we were funding this whole Islamic movement from right here in the United States. Not a word of it in the media, not a word of it mentioned by anybody. It's all part of the permanent record. It's in the book. And yet, of course, totally suppressed here in the United States.
We were talking earlier about why is all this being allowed to happen. There's a whole series of reasons. Remember I said there's at least 15, and there's a little danger about guessing wrong on them because they'll use that as an excuse to avoid accountability. What we can prove that's wrong, at least the what we can prove. But I just want to mention another one of the whys. There's a great book out there by Paul Sperry called Infiltration. And it dovetails with what Ken Timmerman has written and Frank Gaffney has written about all the American politicians in Congress and in the White House, both Bill Clinton and George Bush, involvement still with Saudi, Hamas, Hezbollah, American Muslim Council, known terrorists through Grover Norquist. And this includes Congressman Rohrabacher, who's a Republican. It includes James Saxon, who's a Republican. It includes a number of Democrats. These people have received large campaign contributions. They defend Hezbollah, Hamas, for some of their actions, saying we're being unfair to them, because they have a right to fight Israel and all this kind of stuff. But then they're not taking action against known terrorists. And you look at all the donations they've got, and then they use Muslim groups, CARES, to brainwash our Marines, our DHS, and FBI personnel. I don't think that's an accident. I'd like to bring up something else about Al-Fukra and Rohrabacher and the Oklahoma City bombing.
Now, for our listeners, Rohrabacher is Dana Rohrabacher, Congressman
right.
Dana Rohrabacher of Southern California. Go ahead.
And he is supposedly going to have a hearing on Oklahoma City bombing in September. And 1995, he was the vice chairman of the House Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare. The chairman was James Saxon, Republican from New Jersey. The director for them, the staff director, wrote all the reports and had all their intelligence, was Joseph Badansky, who has U.S. and Israeli intelligence ties. Badansky has written extensively before Oklahoma City and after Oklahoma City about Al-Fukra involvement in terrorist activities. And he also wrote about, he knew in advance about the Oklahoma City bombing and wrote memos that are classified talking about lily whites like Mickelson and Day being used by Islamic terrorists to attack the Murrah building.
Pat, you're going to have to hold that for just a minute. Our guest this evening has been Pat Briley. If you'd like to get the full text of our two-hour talk, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. You can go to newsreviews.com and pull down a lot of Pat Briley's articles. Well, go ahead, Pat. You were talking about Joseph Badansky having written ahead of time, and sent confidential memos telling them about the coming bombing of the Murrah building in 1995.
That's correct. In February, April, and May of 1995, he wrote memos to Saxon and Rohrabacher about these matters. The intelligence showed that the Murrah building was one of several targets to be hit by Islamic groups working with two lily whites, which we believe are McVeigh and Nichols. Okay, and yet they're supposed to have hearings on the Oklahoma City bombing. The information I have so far from talking to his chief of staff is they're not going to cover this. Yet Mr. Badansky ought to be called to testify. And, of course, there's information about Al-Fukra being involved. It's in his book called Terror in 1994, talking about Al-Fukra dovetails with Melvin Lattimore, who was Al-Fukra and Hamas and Al-Qaeda, all three in one. And yet, Mr. Rohrabacher doesn't seem to want to talk about that. But there's more. I find that Mr. Rohrabacher was involved in negotiating with the Taliban before 9/11, and Ken Timmerman writes about this. Mr. Rohrabacher is involved with the American Muslim Council and a gentleman that works with Grover Norquist in the White House, with all these people that are involved in Holy Land Foundation, involved in raising terrorist money for Hamas, like Al-Amudi, Al-Aryan, etc. That's Rohrabacher. And he's supposed to have hearings on Oklahoma City bombing? I don't know if we're going to get the complete story. But the other member of his committee that's supposed to have hearings are Mr. William C. Delahunt of Massachusetts, who's on this committee, is a votes 100% for CARE. He is a strong proponent
What is CARE?
CARE is the Council on American Islamic Relations that meets in the White House with Bush all the time, that trains and dummies down all these FBI and Marines and DHS agents. They are a mouthpiece for Islamic terror. A number of experts, Paul Sperry, Frank Gaffney, Tim Timmerman will tell you about that. Timmerman wrote a book called Preachers of Hate about this. And so you have Delahunt working as an advocate in Congress for CARE, but more importantly, he also is a strong proponent and close friend of Hugo Chavez, the communist dictator of Venezuela, who is helping Al-Qaeda throughout Central America, South America, and that is Mr. Delahunt's closest friend.
We're going to have to let you go, Pat. We could go on for another couple of hours. I'm just getting warmed up, but we'll get you back sometime real soon.
Really enjoyed it. Thank you
so much for being with us.
Bye-bye.
Good night. God bless. And this was Pat Briley, who's a superb researcher. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and we've covered an awful lot of things this evening. If you want to begin to understand what this is all about, let me suggest a video we carry. It's called Jihad in America. You can get either the video or you can get the DVD, but it's an important source of information. That's Jihad in America, and let me recommend it to you. And then, of course, we have our four tape set on Oklahoma, two 4-tape sets, Oklahoma City bombing and Oklahoma City bombing update. We have two videos on what actually took place that day, and then, of course, we have an Oklahoma City special. You need to have the background. As far as 911 is concerned, we have two 4-tape sets, 911 and 911 update. We have videos in plain sight by Certainly, Joyce Riley's husband, Dave, has done a great job on that. And then Dave Wagner's video, The Day That Changed the World Forever. I recommend it to you. Few people have seen it, but it's an excellent source of visualization of what happened. And when you see Building 7 come down, and the whole base of that building explodes 7 hours after the Twin Towers had come down, you know that this was a controlled explosion, and if one of those buildings was a controlled explosion, why should we believe anything else we've been told? So you need to see this video, The Day That Changed the World Forever. All of these things are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will seriously consider coming to our all-day conference. It's the 29th of October, Sunday the 29th of October, here in the Monterey Bay area, a wonderful area this time of year, and I hope that you can make it. We do need advance reservations, so we'll know how many people are going to be there. We're going to have Constance Cumby. We're going to have Chris Pinto, who did the award-winning video, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2, and Chris is really a wonderful, wonderful guest, and I'm sure you'll enjoy him. We'll have, of course, Barrett Schultz will be here, Michael Shaw on the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, who's really doing a great job exposing the Sustainable Development Agenda 21 programs. All of these are available, and of course, we'll be talking as well. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We do hope many of you are making your preparations. I think we're in for some difficult times. If you don't have a Berkey water filter, so you'll have at least safe water to drink, give us a call. And if you do get the Berkey water filter through us, why, you'll get either a free video or a free 4 tapes that we produced. That's the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light water filters. And then, of course, we want to mention that this next weekend, not this weekend, but the following weekend, there is going to be a UFO conference. It's going to be held at the Hyatt Regency over in Santa Clara. We will have a booth there, although we won't be speaking. You'll see a lot of people who have a lot of crazy ideas about UFOs. What are they? Why, they are metaphysical entities. They come from the other dimension, the other spiritual dimension. And if you don't understand that there is another spiritual dimension, you really should get the book, The Beautiful Side of Evil, by Johanna Michelson, or get our 4-tape set on the supernatural, or certainly you would want to get the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. A great new book we're carrying called Hostages to the Devil by Malachi Martin. Hostages to the Devil. They sold their souls for rock and roll. The Supernatural, the 4-tape set of the book. The Beautiful Side of Evil by Johanna Michelson. So much we have. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs 5 hours a day there on the Internet, or 4 hours a day on the shortwave, or 9 hours a day on satellite. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Remember our website. It's RadioLiberty.com. RadioLiberty.com, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war today.
Gretchen.